Welcome back to Super Easy Recap. It's your host Chris here with the entire Star Trek Discovery crew here. I think we are missing Joe right now. He's going to join us. He got a little flat tire, so hopefully he'll be able to join us at the end. But we have Parrish, the Doctor, and Hiroshi joining us. We're here to do, what is this, episodes 6 through 8 of Star Trek Discovery Season 2? I think I got that right.
Yep.
Yes.
The Sound of Thunder. Sound of Thunder, If Memory Serves, and Light and Shadows. So we're going to jump right into this. What do you guys think?
Oh, my God. I know,
I renamed all these episodes. Saru X going to give it to you. Saru X going to give it to you. And DMX song played in all three in my head.
I'm so mad at you because he texted me that when she started watching the shows.
I mean, Hotep Saru is this is why you don't let Kelpian meat get too ripe, because it gets too tough, yo. It literally gets too tough to eat. And let's be honest here. Sound of Thunder is basically Saru realizing that Hotep meme of we were kings.
Yo, he's gonna open up his own school.
Right. He's gonna open his own school and shit like this, and you know, be getting all this money. That is Saru in this episode realizing this. Like, I'm not gonna lie, because they threw me for a loop, because for about a good 90% of this episode I thought Saru made the signal up. I thought he had gotten so bold that he had made up the signal to go free his fucking people, and then they were gonna find out. I was like, hey, weird thing, Captain Pike, there just wasn't a signal here. There was no Red Angel at this sighting. I thought they were going to go that route. And when they didn't and the Red Angel actually showed up, I was like, all right, cool. That's fine. It's fine. But I kind of was feeling like him going rogue. Right. I was kind of going rogue.
Especially considering what happened in episode 8 when Godzilla, let them fight.
Right. Yo, that was great. Yeah. He's like, it's good for them. They need this. I was like, And then when Pike was talking to him, when Pike was like, yeah, so you just let them fight. He was like, well, I mean, Starfleet regulations don't really like cover, you know, doctors that come back from death and Starfleet officers that are actually, you know, have a Klingon inside of them. So it's like, we're playing it by ear. I'm like, yo, Saru is all right, Saru, I mean, okay, all right, again, this is why you got to get the Sculpian when it's ripe, not when it gets too tough, because
all I got to say about that fight is, shout out to Wilson Cruz's muscles, because the man was swollen, and dude is 45 years old with 25-year-old muscles, man. I hate that. I hate you, dude.
I peeped that, and I was like, hey, boo, I mean, I know I'm nowhere in your atmosphere, but still.
Bruh. He wiped the table clean, and I was like, I don't want that smoke. I don't want it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, yeah. The Saru the entire, like, you knew something was up with Saru when it was like, I think it was episode 6 when we didn't get out of the captain's chair.
Oh yeah, he just sat there for a second, and then he paused and he looked at the captain and he was like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to get up.
But I'm not gonna
That's what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
To him. Well, he was stepping to him, and it was funny because Bryce stood up, but Tyler stepped back. He was like, oh, Lord.
Because like, the entire time you're looking at Kelpians, and people are like, oh, they're weak. But I'm like, yo, this motherfucker's tall as shit. And so I'm like, I'm not really trying to.
Wingspan.
Right.
It's like, there's a couple times that Saru has stepped up to the captain, and the captain's kind of like, he hasn't actually physically stepped back, but you can see. Aston Mountain, he has like really good like body acting. He like kind of shrinks a little
because Saru's 7 feet tall. It's like,
yeah,
this is you know what it's like to me. It's like when motherfuckers really think Future gonna fuck up Russell or Russell Wilson, and I'm like, but that motherfucker's a football player. Like, I know that like on their planet they were considered like they thought they were prey and they were food and things like that, but it's like, the motherfucker is still 7 feet tall with a wingspan. Right. Like, I'm not fighting a lanky motherfucker like Saru. I'm not doing. You don't fight lanky dudes. You don't. That's just. Number one rule of fighting. Don't fight the lanky dude. Don't fight the tall lanky dude. He got a wingspan. Right. You ain't gonna win that fight.
Nope. Like you you know, you may be the little guy on the football field, but you're still on the football field.
Right. It's just, you know, I think the entire Tar Heel going like, does Saru not know he's 7 feet tall and super strong and can run? Like, when you think about it, and it just hits you, when you think about what, like, the Kelpians can do, you're like, yo, they're prey, though? You know, like, they run really fast. They have good eyesight. You know, they got all these things. You're like, they're prey? They're prey.
Yeah, that, for real, that's what fucked me up the whole first season. I was like, wait a minute. They're not the apex predator on their planet? What the hell?
What's bigger than that?
Let's talk about what's bigger than them. The goo ocean monster. That thing was scary as hell.
It
looked like a cross between something from, I don't know, Left Dead and zombie horror things and like Golem from Lord of the Rings. It was just creepy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And do you think that goo is part of it, or is it like an exoskeleton to be able to be in the air? Because I think they're like aquatic or something. I
found that whole thing really interesting about how they, you know, when the way this season is going to start pulling things together from previous episodes, and now obviously starting to pull things together from those short treks. I've been finding it really interesting. Wondering that thing. It's like, first of all, like, where did they get the technology? First of all, because it's like you see the sphere. It's like they went through the sphere and all the knowledge the sphere gave them from episode 5, and they're like, oh wow, we can basically track the whole progression and evolution of both species on this planet. And you're like, oh wait, the Kelpians were the dominant species. So, and at some point, the Ba'ul got the technology, and that it wasn't even that they evolved; they somehow got technology, and then used technology to kind of keep from being eaten, almost like how humans do.
And they didn't say what kind of technology. Did they use a virus? Did they bomb them? Like, what happened to cause? Because there was a significant drop.
Well, I think it's when you look at the technology that the Ba'ul have. My question then becomes, who gave it to them? Because like they came.
You
like,
don't think they came up with it on their own?
Why? How would the non-dominant species on the planet come up with that if they're being hunted by the dominant? I just find it. It just seems like, because they're so far advanced, like to the point of almost being more advanced than the Federation was.
It seems like they are so far advanced compared to the Kelpians and a little bit to the Federation, but they've had time to outpace the Kelpians. Like, if you think about just like the difference between, say, the Europeans and the Native Americans, the biggest difference was germ warfare and guns, really.
And not even deliberate germ warfare in that case.
Not deliberate. Right. It eventually became deliberate, but.
True.
Yeah.
True.
That was the big difference.
But I think the X factor there is that. They seem to be being, you know, sent to places where there was some sort of a wrong. And at this point, you know, we can assume that maybe it's likely a temporal wrong. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm kind of where Chris is. Like, it seems like they were helped in some way. And that was like some sort of a breach in the timeline.
So who's helping them? Is it the future things that we see in episode 8? Is it the Romulans? Because that was from Enterprise, possibly. Who would benefit from helping them? I mean, because I don't think the Red Angel is somebody we know. I think the Red Angel is somebody from the future, but...
Yeah, I think we now have seen two things from you. You have the Red Angel, and then whatever I think it's probably maybe AI? It's seeming like, because they said that it got rid of all sentient life on Earth, but in the galaxy. But maybe like everything we've seen so far, it affected the crew member. I can't remember her name. Who seems like she's also part. It seems like she's part AI. So it kind of downloaded into her, and so I'm feeling it's coming that way. But going back to like, you know, my idea of this, you know, the Ba'ul being helped. Like, you're right. So when you look at something like, you know, Europeans versus like, you know, indigenous people of some world, some continent. There's a difference in technology there, but to me, it's still the same species. Why I'm kind of looking like they got outside help is you have two separate species, completely separate species, where one is literally like the prey of the other. Like the other one is, so it's like, how did you get that? Like, it seems like a huge jump to go from where they were to then, getting the upper hand technology wise to then be able to wipe out and then not just wipe out, not just control, but then like stunt the evolutionary growth of the dominant species over top of them. Like that seems like a really, really huge thing.
That's a jump they were capable of making.
Yeah, and it's not even like both weren't like aren't complex beings. So it's not like you humans with like dogs or something like that, where like, yeah, mm-hmm. when we first came about, like wolves were fucking humans up. But then because we were smarter than them, we could kind of put this up together. Seems like Kelpians are have the potential just for much smarts as the Ba'ol did. So it just seems like it seems like somebody tipped the scale somewhere. Maybe it has nothing to do with, you know, the red angel or somebody from the future. It could just be, you know, maybe it's like some other species showed up and had warp technology, was like, hey, we're gonna give you this, or they found something and they went there. It just seems really artificial to me that they were able to just kind of swing it around.
Seems artificial because it seems like there's really three species of Kelpians. There's the evolved Kelpians that went through the Baha, then there's the Kelpians that didn't, because there's a big huge difference between those that did and did not, and then there's the Ba'u. So there's a lot of weirdness with that particular planet, and it might explain why we haven't quite seen Kelpians since.
Mm-hmm.
In later generations, it might have to do with the fact that, like they said, the Kelpians are aware of warp technology, but they don't have the means of doing it themselves. Yeah, which it's kind of like a common impulse colonialism to think about it.
Yeah, I at one point I didn't know where they were going this episode. At one point, mm-hmm. I thought we were going to show you that, you know, that the Ba'ol were like the evolved like Kelpian. I thought
that's what they were going for too. I was like, yeah. Oh, the goo's gonna go away, and you're gonna see his dad.
And then they were like, no.
The form kind of looked Kelpian like,
right?
It kind of does, but it looks like a cancer.
The cancer version,
right? Yeah, so it's like I thought they were going to go that route, and then they didn't do that, and then like I just had no idea where they were going. I mean, I like the way they went and how they did it, and it makes sense. And again, it ties into this larger theme of, you know, the signals and the Red Angel are going to these different points of the kind of right wrongs, and I'm assuming to change. I think what you're seeing is changing the timeline, right? They're
trying to change the timeline somehow.
Right.
Which is interesting, because when we get to episode 8, what planets they showed destruction, there's one that was missing. Mm. I found interesting.
Wait a minute, repeat that?
Well, when they showed the destruction of the planets, the vision that Spock had, she said Andoria and Earth, but she didn't say Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, is Vulcan already destroyed because of Nero? Is that still going to happen?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. So episode 8 fucked me up, because it's like, so how much of current lore are we leaning on? Because when they open that episode, I mean, we're jumping ahead here, guys, but when they open up episode 8 with like, you know, on previous episodes, and they open up with the pilot episode, I'm like, wait a minute, guys, wait.
I won't lie, I paused the app because I was watching on my Apple TV and it kept freezing, right? Mm-hmm. So then I went back to my Xbox and then back to my Apple TV. For a minute, I thought I had pressed play on the original series episode. I'm like, huh?
So did I.
I did the same thing.
So did
I. I paused it and I was reading the little synopsis. I'm like, okay, maybe CBS got the feed wrong.
I was cheering when I saw that. I was like, oh, the white tears of
fanboys
are going to be epic.
Well, so it's like,
they were going to get their hype, and then all of a sudden it's like, God damn it.
Well, I mean, again,
if we thought the whole, oh, they're going to get canceled, you know, we just renewed it for season 3.
Right. Well, that goes back to, again, jumping ahead a little here, because there's a lot of stuff in between here, but like, that right there showed me, it's like, oh, you guys are really leaning in to Star Trek lore. Like, you're like not shying away from it. You're 100% leaning into it. So then, like you said, you're 100% right. Like, it can be anything now. Is Vulcan destroyed by Nero? Is that now still on the table? Is that something that are we now doing all this stuff now? So yeah, it's very, very I find that very, very interesting. It really opens the door for what we're going to, and especially knowing that we're getting a season three already. You know, well, now we're like, it's like, shoot, Negro, we chilling, we doing everything now. So, yeah, I found that very, very intriguing, and yeah, I can't wait to see how it picked up. How many episodes of this season? Is it 16 or 15?
It's 14. 14? I love.
Oh goodness.
No.
I'm not even ready for that. Jeez.
Yeah. We only got six left of Tyler and that glorious beard. Cute What?
I'm not gonna lie. So again, jumping ahead to eight. When Burnham and Spock are talking, and she goes, he's like, you know, stop asking dumb questions. She's like, all right, fine, I'll ask a real one. Like, that beard working for you? Like, you think that beard works for you?
Like, well, actually,
I was like. And like he had to pause for a minute, like on some God damn it! Like,
someone's closest to you know how to hit the point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was exactly what I was about to say.
I see. But it just kind of shows. I was gonna say because we get it later when the Talosians tap into her memory, but it gives us a hint of their relationship before all this.
Mm-hmm.
You don't crack those kinds of jokes unless y'all are close.
Right. Right. You know, and then when you, again, jumping ahead a little bit, but when you see what it was and what caused the thing, which we already know, because then we get in, was it six or seven when you find out, what's the head of, not the head, but the guy that's running the ship of, or thinks he's Leland. Running. Yeah, because it's not him. Giorgio's running that ship now. As far as Giorgio's running.
that happened quick.
Right.
He playing checkers, she playing chess.
Right, I'm just like, come on, dude. But when she basically goes like, yeah, you know, Burn, what's going to happen when Burn and find out you killed, you know, you're the reason why her parents died. So then you're like, oh, so they have something to do with the Separatists. And then, like, there's a whole other element here going on here. And when you find out, again, why
Georgia hinted that there's just even more that she knows about Michael because she's clearly Georgia knows a lot about from her being the Empress, a lot about the universe and different players are just in different places.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she made the comment about, oh, the Talosians did that trick on me and I nuked them off the planet, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, she knows things about different people and she's using that to her advantage to some extent.
That's why you do not send that person there. That's the wrong person to, or maybe the right person, depending on what you look at it and what you're trying to get for. Yeah. But like, just no, it's just all bad. Not a good thing.
Which makes me wonder why they haven't extracted her memory yet. If they have a memory device, like why are they allowing her so much rope?
No, I think she was lying.
You think she's lying?
I think she lied to Burnham for her own reason. About that. That being a memory extractor so that Burnham would run. She's trying to get Burnham in her corner.
Okay.
And what better way than to pull her away from Starfleet? I think she was lying about what that device was.
Okay.
She could have been, but I still don't trust Section 31. They were not going to do anything. Like I didn't trust Old Boy when he was like, oh no, go ahead. And so look, what happened was like, you can come, but like we can't have you on board on the ship. So like you got to go ahead. No, we promise we'll be there. We're right behind you. I don't believe that shit for one second.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, go to the space station and grab a drink. It's on me.
Right, yo. Kick your feet up. It'll be okay. He won't be alone. We good? I'm like, I do not trust this motherfucker one second.
Or how about when they were having the conversation, Giorgio and Leland, and she flipped the tables on him with the Admiral. Like, the Admiral's referred to her as Giorgio, like Captain Giorgio. Mm-hmm. They were talking to her, like, does not everyone in Starfleet know that she's the Empress? Is that a secret that only Discovery and Section 31 and that one Admiral Cromwell know?
I believe because even Pike case. Even Pike doesn't know. I can't remember. Did Burnham ever get a chance to tell him?
Nope.
No.
Yeah, so she doesn't even you're right. I think they don't know. And so she's playing she's getting her own show, right?
The rest of Starfleet.
She's getting her own show in like 2 years. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I mean, remember the rest of Starfleet told them that none of that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only a select number of people that know about Giorgio.
Yeah, she's like captured by the Klingons. I think that's the story.
Yeah, I mean, she was captured, all right. And eaten, but. I'm never going to get over that. I'm just saying they ate the Giorgio. That's just a fact. Like, there's a lot of fucked up things that happen on this show that I don't think we talk about enough. a lot of people get eaten. And you know, I always find that funny, right? Because the Klingons in Deep Space Nine and Enterprise, not Enterprise, but the Next Generation, would always joke about eating people. And you always just like, ha, 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 that's funny. That's funny. Oh, no, y'all motherfuckers were serious. Y'all really do be eating motherfuckers, yo. It's like.
Yeah, it's that joke you tell, and then all of a sudden you make a straight face, right, and you start laughing again.
Right. No, we don't eat you guys unless we season you and put on hot sauce. What was that? Excuse me. What was that bit you put in the back of there? Oh. But yeah, going back to episode 6, the other thing too, you know, I'm really interested in what they're doing with Culver and just the trauma he's going through, of him, you know, I love the fact that he's come back and they haven't just kind of made it to like, oh, everything's back to being normal. It's like he came back from the dead and now he's literally in a new body and he's having to basically experience, you know, everything again. Like he's struggling to find out, you know, who is he really? There was that when they were having dinner, I think it was that episode 8 when they were having dinner and he was basically like, yeah, my mind note tells me that, yeah, this is something I like, but like I'm not experiencing it, right? It's just it's an out of body experience. Like in 6 when he was talking about how the scar is gone, you know,
yep.
And that scar really kind of even when Sammons is telling the story, you can see that scar meant a lot. It's a defining scar, and now it just represents the fact that it's gone now. It's like, oh yeah, it's fine. It's not fine.
Also, like his blank stare, he was like, it was like he knew it meant something, but he had no connection to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's missing. I know it was supposed to mean something, but you know, it was just yeah.
It's rough. It's rough seeing him go through that. Like I don't know how they're gonna get through, and then Stamets is trying to pretend. Like I love that at one point when he kind of calls Stamets on the fact that it's like, yo, I died. You don't say I died. I did die. Like you're not even saying that's what happened. It did happen. You know, we have to acknowledge that. And it's just rough.
And I get Stamets. Like I don't want to come down on him too much, but it is sort of an unreasonable expectation for your loved one to come back from the dead, and then you expect that person to just keep on going like nothing changed.
Yeah,
you know, he was doing the most.
He was really expecting him to just slide right back into his life, like he wasn't traumatically murdered and then stalked for God only knows how time works, where the chart in that alternate realm. Come on, Stamets. I know you missed your boo, but come on.
But yeah, Stamets also had a change where he was acknowledging it was a miracle, like something that's out of science for him. He's such a grounded science person. And they had that argument about how he's always in the lab. He's not doing these inner things. He's not playing music. That's not who he is. And he's like, well, you're a miracle. Look at you. You're here. And I want to do this second chance thing. But it wasn't what needed to be done, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's be honest here. He needs to be therapy. Like I'm still waiting. I was like,
let's talk about that.
There are no counselors
right. on this vessel.
And this is a vessel that needs a counselor. Like, I kind of feel like Dan and Troy didn't really have a lot of stuff to do, like, on the Enterprise sometimes. So just like,
shit.
I mean, just like.
On Discovery?
Right, but like, Discovery, man, she really make a name for herself on Discovery. It's like, come to my office.
Drew, so, Tilly, Michael, right, all right. of them. So, like, oh, need, so, like, a sit-down. Even Pike.
So you were seeing your dead friend from school that turned out to be an interdimensional being that took... Oh, yeah. Oh, hey, Sandy, clear my calendar for the week. I'm going to be busy here. Right? It's just... It's a lot of... Like, these people need... deep fucking therapy.
Oh, damn,
so you're
right.
A half Klingon, not a Klingon human, but you're Tyler, not Voke, but when something attacks you, you talk in Klingon. Huh.
So I'm
you killed somebody, but it was not really you.
So can I tell you that I really feel like, and this is gonna sound so weird, but I feel like Ash and Culver are actually gonna form a bond, not like a romantic bond, but like a bond now. Even because mm-hmm. it's like they're both. If you think of, and like it didn't hit me until Culver said it to Ash. It's like, oh wait, he knows exactly what you're going through. Like he's literally operating in a body that he's trying to figure out. He doesn't know who he is. Neither one of these people know who they are and are trying to figure it out. And you're just like, oh shit, they're literally the only two people on the ship that can really understand this.
I was like trying to hold him back and like kind of doing that whole boxing hugging thing. Like, who do you think you're talking to?
Right. I'm just like, oh, that's actually a good point. Like, they might bond. Like, it's like, that's gonna be weird. It's like, hey, yeah, man, I'm really sorry for killing you, but like, you know, I'm glad we meet once a week to talk about this stuff because, oh man, I can't talk about this with anybody else. It's just, whew, this ship is fucked up, guys.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it was Roja that said it. I knew about it, but it didn't connect. Like, even Pike was fucked up before he got on the ship.
Yeah.
He stepped onto a pumpkin.
You might talk to him quite often, and we don't know about it.
Yeah, that was a great. I have in my notes somewhere. I can't remember what episode it is. I think it was 7, and I was like, "Man, like Pike really a part of this crew now?" Because he kind of he was kind of almost. He was like he's like that new friend you get who you're telling about all your other friends. You're like. Yeah, but see that person over there, like, they're still on the outside. We're kind of friends with them, but like, they kind of fucked over my other friends. So now that new person is like, well, then fuck them then. It's like, hey, whoa, buddy, calm down. It's okay now. We're working through things now. Nah, fuck them. That was Pike with Ash. He was like, hey, listen, buddy, you could have been a member of this crew. You got to fall the fuck back. And I'm like, I mean, and you're not wrong, but it's like there are mitigating circumstances. Like, calm down a little bit, Pike. Like, he was like ready to go to war with the Discovery crew over Ash. And I was like. Yeah. I'm like,
yeah, he had no reason to hate Ash as much as he did.
Right. Like everybody else is giving Ash like dirty looks. Pike was like on some, like, I'll fight them. You want me to fight the motherfucker? I'll fight him. I'll square up.
How about the fact that he didn't say anything about the time echo?
Right. You thought he shot him?
Yeah. And not only that, but you didn't see the things that were grabbing Tyler.
No.
You just saw them.
Again, another one where I was just like, yo, Pike about that life. He was like, he saw himself shoot Ash, didn't see anything else there going like, I mean, if I gotta shoot the motherfucker, he's getting on my nerves anyway. So.
I don't have no fucks to give about that either. He was ready to go.
Pike was like, if I gotta do it, I gotta do it, yo.
I mean, listen.
Pike was like, yo, I'm the driver of the car. You don't touch the music or the AC. Like, Pike, you don't touch my button. I gotta monitor the setting.
Ash learned a very valuable lesson that day. Do not touch another man's radio.
Yeah. Pike was really on some like, listen, two men enter, one man leave type shit. Like, and I'm the captain, so it's like, I can make you disappear. Hey, listen, my dude. I can make you disappear, and nobody's going to ask shit. I'm good.
Oh, dude, he told him that. Yeah. When Ash threw the insignia at him,
right.
He was like, yeah, Captain Trump's that.
He's like, nigga, what is this? What is this shit? What is this? What is this little black shit you got here? You think you're special? Come on, my nigga. I'm good on every starship, nigga. I'm good on Discovery. I'm good on Enterprise. Ask about me. Who the fuck is you, nigga? Get the fuck out of here. I'm like, oh.
Like, I make it 10,000 miles.
It was like he tried to bribe him with a personal check.
Just like,
yeah, Pike seemed like he was ready to go to the trunk. It's just,
you know. Pike in episode 8, it's like, well, hey, listen, man, we about to go on the run. So like, if anybody doesn't want to go, and everybody's just like, hey, yo, just go ahead and run that back. Let's go ahead and just keep it going, man. We good. What head do you want to send us to Captain? We good. Like, I'm just like, it's just been so interesting seeing Pike become so like, so beloved by this crew here. It's been something interesting because again, when he first came in, it was like new guy coming over, taking over the ship. And like, who's this nigga? Now, episode 8, we like, yo, we ride or die. We on the run from Starfleet again. So let's do it.
Well, I mean, you know, to their credit, they did have a space trouble.
Tell Pike not to get on the shuttle. It's like, you're an essential crew member. And yeah. You're like, but I'm the best person for the job. And Saru's like, but you're the captain. And you're going out on this dangerous mission. Which I don't think has been said before. That's like a trope with Star Trek where why are you sending the commander and the lieutenant commander and the chief engineer down to the, but you have 1,000 people.
That's like the president, the vice president, and the speaker of the house all on Air Force One and sending them into Afghanistan.
True. Yeah. I
that is not something I dreamed of a few years ago.
True. But I appreciate them, at least for this one, at least giving a reason, right? Because usually it'll be like, okay, like Picard, like, yeah, we're gonna go down. I'm like, hey, nigga, you kind of old. What are you going down there for? Like, what are you bringing to the table, Picard? Nothing. Like, Kirk, what are you bringing to the? Matter of fact, Kirk, stay here because you're gonna fuck some shit up. You know, so how about you stay here? Pike, you're like,
oh, he's gonna let his dick do the talking,
right?
Yeah, I was gonna say, well, he's gonna fuck some shit,
right? Pike, I'm like, okay, you were a test pilot, is what you do. All right, that makes sense. You are the most qualified person for the job. All right, that at least made sense. It's one of those things where Star Trek Discovery, it does the tropes that we've seen in other Star Treks, but they give you a reason for those, and it makes more sense, you know? And I definitely appreciate that.
All right, so here's a question.
You give reasons like that more often, too, because, you know, like I said in the last one, the chain of command is the chain of command, and you don't send your commanding officer and your executive officer into a dangerous mission like that. That's just ridiculous. Yeah. One of them needs to stay and pilot the ship. Well, command the ship.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, for the most part, they do that here. You know, Saru, and you never really see them send, if Saru's down on a planet, then Pike's up. If Pike's going, then Saru stays. Like, they've done a pretty good job of that most times. Right. Whereas any other Star Trek, it's like, you know, you got Riker and Picard down the same place. She's like, hey, who's running the ship? Wesley? What the fuck are we doing here?
Oh, God, no.
You didn't send the entire bridge crew down to the fucking planet. So who the fuck is running the ship? You got the B. Like, wasn't there an episode of that where the B team? Yeah, it was. There was an episode where, like, the B team was running the bridge. You're just like, what are we doing here, guys? What are we doing? This is terrible. This is terrible.
Yeah, they let the night shift run the bridge.
So here's a question for y'all. What if Pike stays on Discovery? What if that's the transition to the Enterprise being helmed by Kirk? So, how would you all feel about him becoming the permanent captain on the show?
So I wouldn't be upset about it, but I'm like, I think it was episode 7, something, you know what it was? It was episode 7 where I was like, yo, I think we talked about this last time. Saru should be captain. Like, Saru, there was something going on. Like, I think it was when, yeah, because Pike is off with Ash in episode 7. So Saru has a bridge. And so what Saru you watch Saru basically work the bridge and get everybody on track to do what they need to do. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's your captain there. Like, Saru's going to be captain. Like, that's the only reason why I'm like, I like Pike. I think he fits really well with his crew. I don't want him to be there because I really believe that Saru's arc is that he needs to be captain.
Okay. I'm mixed about it because, I mean, again, you know, all credit to Anson Mount. Like, he's really running with this role. And the other thing is, I don't want the captain of the Discovery to basically be the defense against the dark arts position. but at the same time, it just doesn't, it wouldn't really gel for me for him to remain the captain of the Discovery. Yeah. It would just seem like a little too much.
Yeah, I think it would be overtaking his welcome. Like, I think while he's kind of, you know, been accepted by the crew, I think it also comes to the idea of, like, his ship is still the Enterprise and it's still sitting back there. So yeah, I don't think that he stays on.
Yeah, but if memory serves, it kind of solidifies his legacy and the tragedy of Pike, because we all know that, and they showed it in the beginning credit of what happens to him. We kind of all know his destiny, and so we're seeing this very heroic character who's going to do God knows what else that they got in store for Discovery for the rest of the season, do all these great things, and then he leaves to go on the Enterprise. And we in the audience are, you know, while that might be a great praise on the show, we in the audience know that's sealing his fate.
Unfortunately. Eventually he's going to leave, and eventually he's going to, you know, have that accident, and he's going to have to go back to Dallas 4.
He's going to go back to Dallas 4.
Yeah.
Which could be, now that we kind of get a little bit more backstory, a better happy ending. Mm-hmm. Where before, with the menagerie and the cage, it's kind of seemed like a kind of a half-bag deceptiveness. But now we kind of see, like, there is something there.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe when he does leave, we're not, well, it was still tragic, we're not too upset as an audience for the character.
Right, because he did great things on board the Discovery.
Mm-hmm. And since we're changing time, we'll be like, well, why can't we change Pike's fate? Well, we can't.
And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's see what we're gonna say here. Oh, we got Michelle Yeoh kicks back, yo. I fucks with that. Like, she was kicking the shit out of shit out of Burnham. I was like, yo, Burnham, come on. She got really one move, the kicks, yo. Defend the fucking kicks. Like, what are you doing? She was just like kicking Burnham all in the fucking face. I'm just like, yo, what are we doing?
Yeah, Burnham was getting that work by them kicks.
Yo.
Look, like, the fights in all of these episodes were just like, well, damn. They were so good.
Yeah, that's one thing that they've really done with Star Trek. Because, you know, I did a binge of Deep Space Nine last year, and that show is still my favorite Star Trek show. But the fight scenes, they were kind of trash.
You can't fight in a onesie. We've done this before. We talked about this last season.
I think Bruce Lee might disagree with you, sir.
You say what now?
I think Bruce Lee might disagree with you.
I mean, okay, unless you're fucking like magical Bruce Lee, here's what it is. You can't fight in a onesie with a dad bod.
There you go.
With stirrups. You can't do that. Like, you're not gonna. There's no range of motion. You just can't. It's the reason why they got fucking phasers, yo. Like, you can't fight in that shit. You're not getting them high Michelle Yeoh kicks with stirrups in your onesie and shit like that. So yeah, nah, yo. Like, these uniforms are way more functional, yo. Let you breathe a little bit and get a little range of motion in there. Yeah. So I do appreciate that. Like, when Spock took out those doctors, I was like, three people? You think that's gonna stop Spock? Come on. And then
that's not enough.
And then we looked at Burnham's like, you still don't trust me. He's basically like, you still don't believe your own eyes. You think you still think I killed him? I'm like, motherfucker, you just knocked all these people out with a touch to their neck. I don't know what the fuck you just did. Like, are they breathing? Like, what the fuck? You touched that?
He did do a few throw punches in the middle, so you could have cracked some tracheas. Is all I'm saying.
I'm sorry. Like, the two dudes, I can say, okay, maybe, you know, a little bit better. But that lady got like the five finger death grip to the throat, and then she just dropped. I'm like, and then he looks at her going,
that
like,
is the best display of the Vulcan pinch I've ever seen.
And then he's like, you still don't believe your own eyes? Like, I just saw you drop a lady with like three fingers to the throat. I don't know what the fuck just happened there.
That begs the question. Why did you put a human security detail on a Vulcan?
Because you dumb?
Well, they thought he was napping, so they figured out.
I don't believe him!
Hey, I'm not saying they were right. I'm just saying what they thought.
You wonder why? Because they're human and they're logical. That's why.
Because they have phase pistols.
You got to be able to get to the damn phase pistol, though, is the point.
Now let somebody tell me that that's my security detail for the night.
So then here's another question. No. So here's a question that I'm surprised nobody asked. Not here, but on the show. It was like, you know, Burnham's like, oh, yeah, no, those people didn't die. I'm like, are you sure they didn't die? Or did Section 31 then kill them to say that Spock? Because it's like, yeah, like, we don't know those people.
That's not out of the realm of possibility.
Right, because it might not be enough of just saying, like, oh, no, Spock, they were alive when I left. That's what Spock basically said. It was like, well, they were alive when I left. And I was like, that don't mean they're alive.
That's what all murderers say. I didn't do it.
Right. I mean,
yeah, I think Section 31 hemmed them post holes up real quick.
Right.
Because I don't know how bad it would be if one of those people was just a substitute for the day. They wasn't even supposed to be there that day.
Man, I switched with Bob.
Somebody called in sick.
Right. Man, I had tickets to the opera. I was going to get my girl. But Bob called me, wanted me in here. Next thing you know, here I am getting five-fingered Vulcan grip to the throat and a bullet in my head from Section 31. Like, God damn it, yo. What the fuck?
You went into it thinking you were going to get time and a half.
Right.
You got half
the business.
You got half of something, shit.
Got them hands.
Right.
Got them hands. So I also I'm finding now the larger story of what's going on with the Red Angel and what kind of drove Spock a little bit, I guess not even crazy, but to kind of question his own. It's been really funny, right? There's been a lot of people, and this entire season has been basically people questioning who they are in their own realities. Because again, we've already talked about Culver and Ash. But you have, you know, Spock questioning like what his reality, his own reality, and what was logical and things like that, and not being able, because he's basically being fucked up by a temporal situation in time. You've had Tilly when she had her friend that being on her that questioned her reality. Like, it seems like everybody here is questioning their own realities. And that seemed to be the big overall theme of this, and having people trying to come to grips with who they are, and then also take control of their own destinies. And it just seems like they've done a good job of kind of connecting everybody. Everybody's going through something similar, and then whether that connects to the entire thing with the Red Angel and what it's trying to do with changing the past.
Yeah, the Red Angel, I think, really is probably one of the both now Michael knows defining moments for both of their lives. Like, the Red Angel has always been with Spock and has led to him questioning his entire identity and reshaping it because of those events of Michael leaving and then him saving her and just all his other stuff of being, you know, half-open and all that stuff going on. And it's interesting to see, like, what is the fundamental plan that he says that we have to follow to save everybody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because he still trusts the Red Angel. I mean, the Red Angel saved Michael. The Red Angel has shown him this possible timeline future. But the Red Angel also kind of fucked with his brain, you know? And he had to go to Talos IV to get it fixed. I mean...
Sorry, go ahead.
But he doesn't know exactly who the Red Angel is or everything, only that it's human and he couldn't get past the quantum whatever shielding.
Yeah.
So he doesn't know everything.
And it seems like
a faith on him.
Right. And all these things are connected. Like, you know, it coming back and saving Burnham, meaning that originally Burnham died. So Burnham is necessary. So you had to say Burnham. You have to, and it makes us want to go back to now see everything we've kind of witnessed before. You know, it saved that small group of people. It would have been wiped out by the nuclear blast. What do each of these things that they've saved? What does it do to change the timeline?
Well, Parrish, didn't you say that you thought the people were possibly from the Calypso storyline, like the future?
Yeah, I thought maybe they were from Talos IV.
There's that, but then there's also the fact that without them saving that group of people, you don't get Hugh back.
Yeah, so right.
You
don't get Hugh back. You don't you don't get the sphere that gave them all that knowledge, the knowledge data dump. Remember they didn't just save what was her name, my favorite engineer that they saved off the first engineer.
Reno.
They get Reno, but remember they saved a bunch of other people too, that would have died as well. Like there's everywhere they go, they're saving people, and I'm wondering if that all these things will come together, and it's like, you needed all these pieces of the puzzle to come forward. Like, you know, they all have some piece that's going to be what stops whatever from going down whatever path they were going down before. And it started all the way back when...
Because the Red Angel saved Michael, the Klingon War started a different way, possibly.
Right, right. So you have all these things now happening, and they're all connected in some time, and I'm very intrigued to see where they go with this, because like I said, they started realizing this the last couple episodes of, hey, this is all connected, this all means something, like saving the Kelpians and basically bringing a new balance, a new balance of order. Like I said, when I first looked at this, I was like, oh well, maybe they're, you know, maybe Saru made that up. It's like, oh no. So there really was a Red Angel sighting there, and it was the purpose of that. And the purpose of it was when it really wanted them to do. It wasn't. It might not even been to, you know, to save the Kelpian and stop the Ba'ul. It what it really wanted them to do was to stop to shut down that technology.
And maybe even go through that.
I just thought about something. Remember the vision? Right? No, it wasn't that. Remember the vision that Spock shared with Michael. The technology of those bombs destroying those planets looked very similar to what was coming out of those pylons or coming from the Ba'ul ships to activate those pylons.
So maybe the what gave the Ba'ul that technology? Is like it just seemed off. What if whatever, you know, again, we're dealing with time travelers here. What if somebody went back into the evolutionary point? So what if it's even this? What if it's not even the fact that the Red Angel is changing the timeline? What if it's going back and correcting it?
Ooh.
Temple war situation?
Yeah, the whatever came out first changed the timeline. So it killed, made sure Burnham was killed. It made sure the Kelpian were being suppressed evolutionary by whatever technology they gave the Ba'ul. And all these things happened here, and it did all these things. What if the Red Angel now is going back and kind of fixing these little points here by making these small corrections to the timeline?
That was my thought is that something that whatever they're doing, they're correcting something. So like somebody gave, you know, it goes back to the giving the other species the technology they weren't supposed to have it, and so they're going back and fixing that.
Yeah. There's a lot of different options. So it's either they're fixing time, or they're correcting it, or they are actually just directly making changes. But it does seem like whatever came through and kind of affected what was her name again, Commander Arun? I think that was
Irem. Arun. Irem. I'd say.
Yeah, whatever affected them, I think, is the enemy or the other side, and so now you have both of them kind of in this world trying to compete on what they're doing. So like, I'm very intrigued by how this goes, because there's a lot of ways it can play out, and it definitely means that, again, and we knew this when we first started watching, that none of this stuff was random, right? All these things matter, and all these little things are going to come together to have a whole piece. But they've had rippling effects already. Like you said, without this, we don't get Culver back. We don't. Burnham doesn't live. All these things happen here. So I'm very, very, very intrigued by how this stuff goes.
I would be interested to see how, because we had the Calypso episode where the ship Discovery is 1,000 years in the future and it has an AI. We know Section 31 has an AI called Control, which I guess we got that confirmed. I was always suspicious and wondering if that was the case. We know from Georgia that the AIs answer to her instead of us answering to them. And then we have Armin, who got, you know, infected, who's some kind of augment that they haven't quite explained yet. Like what exactly she is, and you have the spears knowledge. So I'm wondering, I know it's the future things are not Borg, but I'm just wondering, like, what exactly are they? Are they some program we started, someone else's program that started? How is it all going to connect that way? Because it's a small background there that they've been kind of talking, but hasn't come completely to the full service yet.
This show is so loaded because y'all made a couple of points I never would have thought of just me watching the show. And that's just a testament to the writing of the show. The show is so loaded.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Like I love
shows on TV.
Yeah, no, I love that we can have these conversations, and it really, you know, it touches on, it has, honestly, I love this Star Trek because it has all the things I think the previous Star Treks were trying to do, these deep philosophical questions and things like that, but then it's able to really kind of dig deep into them and really, you know, be even smarter about them. And then on top of this, something we didn't mention already, but I think we mention it every time. The show is fucking beautiful. Like, yes. when they come out in episode 8 to Talos 4, and like it looks like they're like coming off like the sun or something like that, or like the rings of, like, it's a beautiful scene. Wow. Like, that shit looks so
that
fucking
episode, that whole episode is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's like, this is amazing. You guys are putting money into this shit cuz this is ridiculous, you know? And wow, I really thought that was truly it's stunning and gorgeous to watch. Like, before we even get into like the stuff that the episode talks about, just looking at the episode and seeing this, how they shoot things and how like slick everything is, oh, it's just great. It's just great.
How about like the time? What is it? Tilly called the time thing that they were going into. It was very pretty. Like the blues, like there was like five different blues as they were going through it. And then the probe that got spit back at them, like, I still had questions about it because its arms kind of look like, you know, the Matrix kind of robot thing. But I was like, didn't it breach the physical vessel? Wouldn't they have exploded? That's just a thought that came to my brain. But, you know, all of it. And then the probe, when it got hacked and shot, it still functioned. And I'm like, zombie probe? I'm like, oh my God, this show. And then I was like, the shuttle, it was like, is the shuttle database, does every shuttle have like a copy of the computer? Because I was like, there's some things that, but it's the same time, like, I'm seeing Tyler like hitting it, like Russian style, like trying to fix it. I'm like, what's going on here? And then Sam is popping up, and it's just the effects on this show. It looks so real. It looked like a physical prop. It didn't look CGI to me personally. I don't know.
So first of all, we're not doing my baby like that. He wasn't trying to fix it a la Armageddon. He was trying to disengage it. We're not going to do my baby.
Either that, I was going to go with a caveman.
He was doing percussive maintenance. That's what we called it. Percussive maintenance.
He was trying to fix the shuttle, you know, just banging it off.
I'm going to hell.
See, I was thinking, I was like, oh my God. Banging it off, huh? All right. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Doctor, for going right on with that one. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. She went all in.
Yeah, she did. Your ass ain't slick.
I'm sorry. I didn't say it, damn it.
You ain't have to say it. We all are broke. We knew what you were thinking. Fast ass. You need some water?
Oh, poor Rosa, she's like, y'all grow the fuck up.
No.
That's worse on the Doctor Who one.
Yeah. It really is. It really is. This is tame in comparison.
Tame.
All right. Anything else before we go into the emails and the article we have?
No, I think we're good.
Nope.
All right, cool. Here's
the... I know what it is. Watch the show.
all right.
Now watch it. It's perfect.
Pretty much.
All right, cool. Here's the first email from Felix. It says, hey, y'all, Felix here. I've been enjoying Star Trek Discovery a lot this season. I had fun last season, but they really stepped it up this season. This being my first Star Trek show is just about everything I could have hoped for. I was a baby when The Next Generation was airing, and I was trying to figure out my ABCs through Voyager and Deep Space Nine. I was too edgy for my own good when Enterprise was on, but it finally kicked for me with the 2009 movie. Then I really loved it. I kind of ruined Into Darkness for myself by watching Star Trek Wrath of Khan before it came out. and didn't like it as much as I would have liked. I enjoyed the last reboot movie so much so movie two. So this feels so much like that run of movies brings me a so much like that that run of movies brings me a lot of joy. And this time for some of my favorite actors, I love Saru X in episode six. I didn't watch the short treks about him before seeing the episode, but I got enough context clues to take it what was happening. If you haven't watched the that's I think one of our favorite short treks. So if you haven't watched it, definitely go back and watch it. I kind of wish more episodes were this long, but man, this one was a ride all the way through. Not really much I can say other than they absolutely smash it. Couldn't have been better. Next episode was slightly less hype, but I enjoyed it nonetheless. I love seeing the Empress slowly roast Leland out of a job. I can't wait for the Section 31 spinoff. Yeah, it's like, dude, like, why did you think this? Like, when they were talking to them and he was like, well, actually, I think it was like, actually, we were talking to Captain Giorgio. And I was just like, see, dude, you lost your job. Like, you don't know you lost your job. Like, you ever been in a job and you're beside somebody who still thinks they're in charge, but you know they lost their job. They just don't know it. Like, they're the last person to realize they lost their job. That was Leland. He's the last person to know he's lost his job. So
yeah, Leland's days are numbered.
Yeah. I love Michelle Yeoh so much. I was glad they got Spock finally after all this time, but I can't help but hate the beard. Come on. Leave the beard gang alone. It's all.
Yeah, Burnham got him pretty good on that, too.
Yeah.
Spock is looking mighty fine in the beard. You leave him alone. I know his sister had jokes, but no, he can keep it.
It's all I'm looking at in this scene, like what's going on with this beard. I know he wasn't himself for a bit, but he could at least stop by the space barber and got a decent shape up. I'm glad Michael roasted him on that episode 8 because I was legit going crazy looking at that thing. With what happened in episode 8, also, I'm sure I might need to watch one of the original series episodes for context because even that recap was a bit brief in my opinion. I was completely lost on what was happening with regards to Pike. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I was still shocked they did that. Like, they went all the way back and used it. Again, I don't think this is a show just like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where they don't do things on accident. And so them using the original like pilot scene, not like reshot and reimagined, but using like the actual pilot scenes for that, it means something. It means something, and you have to take that, you know?
And also, we have this under wraps.
Yeah.
In a place where we have so many spoilers, like nobody knew the Talians were going to show up. Or the fact that Melissa George was going to be Vivian.
Mm-hmm.
No one knew this was coming. So it's very shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did that to basically set the tone of that episode because that episode felt like more like a classic episode.
Oh, and Hiroja. You know who was the, in Spock's memory, the lead scientist?
Yes, there was so many that fall was monkeys. There.
So that was Olivia from 12 Monkeys.
Yes.
That's a big
Monkeys, that, and the Balu weapon reminded me of the Splinter. I was like, Splinter!
Yeah.
Let's see.
If I can address the question directly. So the episode that they were, that they put at the front is actually not, I mean, it's kind of not considered to be an official Star Trek show. It was the pilot, but it was rough. And so they basically, with the Menagerie, they got a chance to take that footage and reintegrate it into the story. Mm-hmm. And so you probably could get away with just watching the Menagerie.
Yeah. I don't think you need to watch. Honestly, you could probably just get away from reading it up on Wikipedia or go to
Memory Alpha.
It's gonna throw off your understanding of the universe because that was before Vulcans were described as purely logic based. I mean, because Spock was seriously like giggling and grinning like through half of that original pilot.
Yeah,
and honestly, the depiction of Pike is not the best either because he was kind of a chauvinist. Actually, he was a chauvinist.
Kind of.
Yeah. He was a chauvinist.
Thank you, very much
over this.
I mean, the person who takes over after him is fucking Kirk. So, I mean, yeah.
I think Chris is right. You can just look it up on Wikipedia. I don't know that I would recommend you watching the episode. I watched them over again just because I'm nutty about Star Trek like that. But I don't know that I would recommend anybody watch it.
No. Like Wikipedia, Memory Alpha, something like that. Like get the cliff notes on it. You'll be fine. Like you don't need to rewatch that. I felt right. like I missed something somewhere the whole time with him. But the flashbacks, though, I really like how they were handled. I'm also so happy Spock understood that he didn't explicitly forgive Michael in the end. With something that big, I'm sure it would take time for him to forgive her. The dynamic once he was back was great. I can't wait to see more of them interacting. Wondering if Spock will be sharing a workstation with Michael or just chilling for now. Well, they're all on a run right now, so it's gonna be interesting to see how that whole thing works. I love the fact that again, Giorgio is just so
backing up. I get why Spock didn't forgive her outright.
Mm-hmm.
It's still cut because I'm like, hey, you know why she did it?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, like, I regret it. That hurt me.
Well, so
that was brutal.
Well, I think
when they showed the scene, I was like, I was misting up. I was like, yo, man, you can't do my man Spock like that. He's a kid.
So here's my thing too with that, because we know again, Spock is half human. So how much of the? Because and I think that the interesting thing I always find with Spock is that because he's half human and half Vulcan, people sometimes think his coldness is just being his Vulcan side. But I'm like, sometimes I'm like, when he was doing that and he didn't was like kind of, I was like, that's not the Vulcan side of him. That's him actually just being that. That's the human side of him that's hurt and is that lashing back out. And I think that's right. What that is. Like, he understands what she but he's not trying to give her that forgiveness, not because it's illogical, not because he's over and past with it. He's still fucking hurt by even right. knowing what it is. And that's his human. That's the human side of Spock, right?
Well, I also think that, I mean, you know, a lot of times people don't fundamentally understand the Vulcans' relationship with emotions to begin with. They have turned to logic because when they are emotional, they almost kill themselves off.
Right. They're
more intense.
They're human times 10. Yeah, they're human times
10. And I think Enterprise really helped color that for the Vulcans with the storylines that they had on that show.
Yeah, they did.
Well, you can see it with Saren when because we didn't talk about that scene where his wife was kind of like calling him out on that. And you can see that he was fighting back them tears. He was trying.
Yeah, he was like, I am not going to lose both my children in one day. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
Amanda read his ass. She's like, look.
Right. Oh, she did. She did.
I chose his life. I love you, but nah. We're not doing this. And they've had this conversation before, but they're having it for real this time.
Yo, she called him out on the I have a black wife.
Yeah.
He did. I'm sitting there with the like. There's just the ooh, you gotta.
Yeah, that was rough. Yeah. I was like, ooh.
Yeah, I was just ooh, boy.
Mm. Amanda's going there. Okay.
Like, went for the juggler. Like, just ooh. That now that's a Vulcan neck pinch right there. Cause off.
I have a human wife.
Right. It's just like, ooh, you getting like that's kind of. Kind of rough there, buddy. He's like, you're gonna have to. Somebody's sleeping on the Vulcan couch tonight. So, and then finishes the email. Lastly, Huge Resurrection has been an emotional roller coaster. I was so happy that they brought him back, but man, I can't even begin to imagine what it must be like to be in a completely different body with new edges and taste buds. I feel bad for Stamets, but he'll have to just let you come to grips with it. I'm sure they'll get back together later, but it still hurts to see them break up for now. I wanted to root for Hugh so bad, but when he was fighting Tyler, but my man Tyler was giving him the business. You know, Hugh was, you know.
I felt that Tyler was holding back.
Tyler was definitely holding back. But I was like,
tied into that box and threw him through that damn window.
Right.
But Colbert was throwing some hands. Like, he's no slouch.
Right. Hugh couldn't touch him. Poor baby. Looking forward to seeing where things fall. Go with him. Felix out. So that's the one email, and then we got another one from Peyton.
Real quick, I always have to acknowledge Hugh is our Sheffield correspondent for Doctor Who, which is where Doctor Who is set this season. So we always have to acknowledge that. Thank you for writing.
Oh yeah, welcome back.
Here we go. How much money are they spending on this show? Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot. It is just beautiful to look at. Also, the visual effects, people clearly played a lot of Mass Effect. The city on Vulcan looked like the Asari city in the Layer of Shadows, Shadow of the Shadow Broker DLC. Yeah, we brought this up before that it feels like this show feels like what Mass Effect would be like as a movie.
Is that what the suit? Because the suit kind of looks like a Gundam, like before they go into the mecha suit.
Yeah.
Or Mass Effect. That's what I wrote. It looked familiar, and so did the Balu ship.
Mm-hmm.
I know
mm-hmm.
there's like some 80s like video game that I played that they look like that shape. I just can't pin it.
Yeah, it's but very Mass Effect-y. Like I would not be surprised if whoever did some of the designs for that are getting some input on this show here. The Emperor is a living embodiment of, look at me, I'm the captain now. She's taking that Section 31 job from dude in front of his face. The Section 31 leader straight up told him, I'm talking to her. She hit him with the shut your mouth when grown folks is talking. The Emperor stays scheming. No wonder she became Emperor. I can't wait for her show. Saru X, he's spicy as fuck now, but not as good, not as tasty. He's a little too tough. Can't eat this Saru. It's a little, you know, you gotta... Just past his due date. He come with a wasabi and miso soup.
I hate all of you right his now. People,
his people. His people.
He got that habanero heat.
Right. You know, his people. People might have been a little bit. This is why you do not cook kelpian well done. You got to have kelpian medium rare. I'm just saying.
Oh my God, you have, it's been floating around for a few weeks, and I think I shared it. That little video someone put where they had put those three or four lobsters into a wok, and one of them jumped out and turned off the stove.
Yeah. That's Saru. That's Saru.
I have not seen that, but I'm going to have to go look for that.
Yeah, that's Saru.
I didn't see that. I thought where a crawdad was smoking cigarettes, but.
That's the one that I saw.
Yeah. On the striking.
It's like, yo, these niggas trying to boil me. I said, man. Go ahead with that.
His people might have really been the bad guys back in the day. Season 2 is killing it. Love this show. It's been good enough to podcast every week. I'm just saying, peace, y'all. Yeah, we just don't have time to podcast every week. You guys are not tricking me into that shit. Not happening. But no. I also love when they came back to the planet. This is going back to episode 6. This is why I thought Saru faked the signal, because it's like, oh, so you just happened to go back to your village, and then you went back to the village, and your sister now is the priest. And I was like, oh no, you planned all this shit. You're freeing your people. I know what you're doing. And then like I just knew that he had faked everything, and it turned out no, he didn't. They just happened to show up there. And like I said, all these things are just too much of a coincidence to be like by accident. So this is definitely some intelligent design and some intelligent like. Being is pushing this up here, going from there. So, we have an article we want to talk about, right?
Yeah. So we already kind of talked about it. Star Trek Discovery is officially been renewed for season 3. They're gonna have a new showrunner on the show. Her name is Michelle Paradise. She did the originals and Heart of Dixie, and so she's gonna co-run the show next season. With Alex Kurtzman, who's still the main guy that's spearheading all the Star Trek shows, including Star Trek Discovery. The big news for me that gave me delight was that on the new Star Trek Picard show, they promoted, I'm trying to find her name, they promoted a female, black female, to be the head showrunner.
I saw that on Twitter. I was very happy about that.
Haley Coupler, I believe, is going to be the one that is going to do it. And it's the first time she has run a show herself. And she's going to be the first black female head showrunner for a Star Trek series.
I saw.
You saw that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, yes. So some diversity, some more women writers, more, you know, showrunners. I mean, Star Trek has had a history of having women writers and women showrunners, and this is just another one in that chain, if you will. This is the first, you know, black female to do so. Yeah. And there's just been other stuff that, if you want to link to the episode, if people are interested, there's some synopsis of the Star Trek Picard show that's supposed to come out later this year, allegedly, is what they're shooting for, is the end of this year. They're already shooting now.
The only thing that makes me uncomfortable about what I read was that they were going to touch on the Kelvin stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the show, the Star Trek Picard show, is going to take place after the Nero incident. So it means that the Romulan world has been destroyed, and that is the timeline that they are going from.
So my thing is, with that idea, then are they like we said in this episode? Are we connecting everything through that timeline that kind of got established in those movies?
See, since there's two timelines, there's the one where Spock went back and Nero went back, and then there's a timeline where the Romulan world has been destroyed and time hasn't been altered.
So
necessarily, if you think.
So we've basically created a Star Trek multiverse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
with a mirror
universe, Picard is dealing with the aftermath of a destroyed Romulan world. And some of the rumors, but it's not been confirmed, is that unification between the Vulcans and the Romulans is a big thing where they're getting their inspiration from. And it kind of makes sense since Patrick Stewart is having a bigger hand in the development of the show, of Breck exit, of, you know, England leaving. And they're using the Vulcans as, you know, leaving the Federation. And the catalyst is the destruction of Romulus.
Interesting.
But those are rumors.
I'll put it this way: they've done so good. They've done a good job with Star Trek Discovery so far. You know, it's one of those you gotta fuck up.
All that said, you know, I'm in until I'm out. But I just wonder how that's gonna go.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So we'll see. But I will say this, it's interesting to me that CBS All Access has basically gone all in on Star Trek stuff. It's like, so we got going all in Star Trek. We're the Star Trek channel now. Star Trek and, because next month we get Twilight Zone. That's it.
Yeah. And the other Star Trek shows that they officially announced is, of course, the Section 31, which is not supposed to come out until 2020. Mm-hmm. Then an animated show called Lower Decks, which is supposed to be about, you know, the plebes, if you will, of the other people on the different vessels, and that's supposed to be animated. And then they have another one they haven't announced yet. But the other big rumor is, and they officially confirmed, is that this summer they're supposed to put the Star Trek Discovery episodes during the summertime to watch on regular CBS to lure people in into access.
Oh, good idea. What am I paying for? Yeah. Oh,
they're trying to do the reverse thing that other shows have done, where if you look at like Breaking Bad became very popular because AMC put Breaking Bad on Netflix, and people were able to binge the first three seasons, and they started watching, or the first two seasons, and then they came in for the season three premiere, and their ratings went up. Riverdale, that CBW show, benefit a lot of shows that benefit from the Netflix thing, but they aired on television first, and then they went on Netflix. So.
Well, Cloak and Dagger was used, that time slot was used to hook people into Runaways. So, I mean, again, it seems to be the going trend.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. Next episode comes out this Thursday. Anything else you guys want to say before we wrap this one up?
No, that's it.
All right.
If we want to talk about
new commander. I saw the preview.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, what?
The commander that came from, I don't know her character's name, they came from Pike's ship from the Enterprise. I'm like, please don't take her out. Please don't take her out. I like her. Because you don't know. This show kind of has a Game of Thrones vibe to it, you know. Anyone can go.
You're right. You're not right. I mean, you're not wrong. You're right.
Yeah. Did we want to touch on Kate Mulgrew shouting out to Brie Larson? Because I actually did see that when she did it on Twitter, and
it was beautiful.
It was gorgeous. It was from one captain to another. I don't have the tweet up. I can pull it up, but you all can find it. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, no, it's been great watching all that stuff come together. So, yeah, I think that's it. And so again, we'll be back in three episodes, which will be, so wait, there's six episodes left, right? So that means we'll this is perfectly timed. So we'll do two more reviews ourselves for the last six episodes of this season. So if you're not watching Star Trek Discovery, you need to be, because the show is awesome. It's beautiful to watch, and And honestly, for those few months, it is, you know, worth the what, the $6 to $9 you're paying for the CBS All Access app. So, well, anyway, guys, we'll be back soon. Thank you guys very much for joining us. Until next time, we're out of here. Peace.